This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Republicans introduce a revived tax cut proposal after Governor Evers vetoed a similar one last month. We explain whether there could be compromise. Plus, Wisconsin's top election official was praised by supporters and targeted by election deniers during a public hearing as her job remains on the chopping block. And impeachment is yet again floated by Republicans as both parties weigh in on a recusal motion seeking to remove Justice Jana Protasiewicz from redistricting cases. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 1st.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., Republicans introduced kind of two package of bills. Well, one is going to be on child care. One is the revived tax cut plan. And they're doing this, as we know, they're going to be coming back into session in 2 weeks. Let's first start with taxes. Now, we knew this was coming. Governor Evers vetoed in the state budget, slashed Republicans, rolled it back significantly. And now this is the new plan that we've been waiting for. There's some of the same aspects in here. One of the newest parts is that it targets retirement income and eliminates some taxes on that. So Republican leaders said they believe this revised plan, which is amounting to about $2.9 billion in cuts, they thought it would satisfy Governor Tony Evers as he called for more targeted tax cuts. Now, the plan would tap the state's $4 billion surplus to lower the state's third income tax bracket from 5.3% to 4.4%, and it would waive the first $150,000 on a couple's retirement income from taxes. So that's kind of the new portion of this. Governor Evers, he did respond to a portion of the bill with a station up in Eau Claire that he believed the retirement portion was somewhat of a compromise, but he also still had concerns overall with the plan. Republicans had a public hearing on this on Wednesday, still tried to sell it as it's time to bring this surplus back to the taxpayers and to retirees to give them some benefits. Let's first just take a listen from one of the Senate authors about the bill, and then we'll get more into where we go from here on this proposal.
All of these little costs are adding up, adding up, adding up, and we're sitting on all this money that these individuals have earned and paid in. It needs to go back. This isn't just for one particular group of people. This needs to go back to the retirees, to the hardworking folks that you're seeing in these mills, to the grandparents, and I'm excited to be part of this bill. And I think that once, as I mentioned earlier, once again, if you're listening to the people that you represent, I don't think this is one party or another party issue. This is across the board, and people are asking for their hard work to be appreciated and their funds to be returned to them.
So we know the governor's not super jazzed about this plan. He does like some parts of it, like I said, dealing with retirement income. But this was kind of the opportunity for Republicans to give him something, which even Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says, I want to give something to the governor that he will sign. Remains to be seen if that day happens.
Yeah, so retirement piece first. If you think about it, people who are still in Wisconsin after age 65, haven't moved to Florida or the Sun Belt to avoid the taxes, you're losing their tax money if you do this. The argument, though, is that you're keeping them here to spend money on other things. You're getting sales taxes you wouldn't have otherwise. You're involved in community events, so that's your kind of hook. The tax bracket, Evers raised this issue back in the summer when he vetoed both top income tax bracket reductions of the U.S. Treasury Department has this rule in place that if you take federal COVID-19 money from ARPA, you can't then take that to offset a tax decrease. Now, no state that has cut taxes has been penalized by the federal government. They haven't tried to recoup the money. Can you imagine in a presidential election cycle, the Biden administration coming after Wisconsin for
right.
money over tax cuts? So that's, I don't know how that threat is, but Evers did raise it again. His administration says you can do a smaller package and I'd be okay. So we'll see where this lands, but I don't know there's an appetite yet for grand compromise because remember Evers wanted to use part of our surplus to increase subsidies for childcare. And he kind of hinted, if you pair them together, we can create a deal. I don't get the impression there's a lot of kumbaya coming to the Capitol just yet. I ran into one lobbyist today who said he expects not much of subsidy done this fall. We'll see. But I don't know the governor's there yet on this tax package. We're going to get there in the end.
Right, and we still haven't heard from Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue on this tax cut proposal. We know he has been a huge fan of a flat tax, but that didn't really go anywhere besides one public hearing. But this plan, is just a big question. I mean, of course, we knew Republicans were going to tweak it to their liking. But will it satisfy the governor? I mean, it already appears that it's not. That kind of leads us into the next aspect. He called them to do something on taxes and child care. Well, they did, but it's not really necessarily, they don't go as far enough as he would like. And that's specifically with the child care bills. We've heard from the governor's staff that he is not on board with them because they don't use any more state money to pump into child care centers. Instead, they do a lot of easing of regulations in general and hoping to expand daycare centers and create new loan programs. So here's what some of the proposals would do. It would raise the number of children who can be in a day group center. It would also lower the minimum age from 18 to 16 for individuals to supervise children alone. There's also a new state-issued child care savings account, and it would create a new loan program for providers if they expand capacity or make improvements at these facilities. So this is, once again, putting them in a tough spot. Will they be able to agree on it? I mean, I don't think so.
Yeah, well, people are unhappy about child care. I mean, it's high. I had two kids in child care many years ago. I know how much expensive it is. People are feeling stressed about it. The governor's called a special session for September 20th to take up a workforce development package that includes child care subsidies. He's harping on it, going to child care centers, saying if we don't do something, they will close. Republicans, though, don't want to put more money into the system because you're creating an ongoing commitment. Because when you turn off that stream of funds, if you go, okay, we're going to do it for 2 years, we're going to put more money in, well, 2 years from now, the same debate comes up again. So their answer is deregulation. You know, pulling back some of these things, softening some rules, trying to make it easier to operate in their minds. The problem is, for Democrats, you're not doing something that's going to help immediately in their minds. And two, you are lowering standards. Those rules are there for a reason. So Democrats will argue that, look, we want to have certain safeguards in place that makes us feel better about who's taking care of our kids and how they're doing and all that kind of good stuff. So I don't see a grand compromise just yet. And oh, by the way, while both this tax package and child care package have come out, we're not sure the full caucuses are at for Republicans. Senate Republicans and caucus, I think this coming week, the first time basically since the budget, they've been scattered across the state for the last couple months. We'll get a real good feel sometime after that of where that caucus is on taxes. I heard an argument, for example, that there's some Senate Republicans say, look, if we let the surplus just sit there, we could take that $4 billion and put it toward a bigger tax cut in 25, 27. That's just one theory out there. Mm-hmm. So where are they at about doing some more incremental ahead of time? We don't know exactly where they're at. And Devin Lemieux, who got married a couple weeks ago, this hasn't been around the Capitol a whole lot, talked about these things. We're waiting to see where are they on these big questions.
Right, because we know Assembly Republicans, they're likely going to pass these when they're back on the floor. But yes, there's a floor period in 2 weeks on the calendar, but we haven't really heard from when the Senate will be in and whether they'll start holding hearings on these bills as well. It's important to note, though, that the pandemic era funding that pumped into child care centers, Evers wanted to revive that program. Republicans rejected that, but it will continue up until at least February. So that's maybe something that I'm going to be watching for, seeing where, you know, is this going to lead to a bunch of child care centers closing, which is what the governor has been, you know, talking about, traveling the state, trying to catch people's attention. But Republicans just don't seem interested in using more state funds for that because, like you said, I mean, they don't want to keep promising you're going to get all this funding. And at some point, it's going to have to be cut off. All right, now let's move on to the Senate Elections Committee this week. Move forth with the confirmation process with Megan Wolf, who is the state's top election official. We knew that Megan was not going to show after last week we talked about that she said, basically citing advice from Attorney General Josh Call that said, hey, Republicans believe they have no authority to move forth in this process to essentially lead to her firing when and if it reaches the Senate floor. What's looming over this is a possible lawsuit. Who's going to act? Because there is basically Republicans and Democrats are viewing the law completely differently. Mm-hmm. Democrats believe there's not a vacancy, that she can stay in this role. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux believes that the votes that happened during the WEC hearing, that they didn't renominate Wolf, but he interprets the law that there was enough people there that they can go ahead and go forth this. So what this hearing really turned into, without Megan there to speak for herself, we had a few county clerks, municipal clerks speak on her behalf, kind of praising her. One in particular, Lisa Tolleson, she's the Rock County clerk. She spoke about, you know, here's what's at stake if Megan's not in that role. And she talked about, quote unquote, the crazies will come out. And she kind of said that when there was a lot of election deniers in the room also testifying and, in a sense, attacking Megan, who wasn't there as well. So let's just hear from both of them and the chairman, Senator Knodel, who still is not certain on whether he will hold an executive vote, which would, again, move forth with this process, which is the next step that everyone's looking for. All right, let's take a listen to both of them on this issue.
Megan Wolf provides strength, guidance, and support through our elections across the state. Her strength and knowledge, her ability to run a tight ship and keep things running, immense, intense pressure is amazing. With the actions and accusations that have been made toward election officials, we are seeing the highest turnover in county clerks and municipal clerks in our history. We need strong leadership, and Megan has proven that.
The AG's statement or opinion that came out to me is just that, an opinion, and we take that under advisement. All the rest, the speculation about court proceedings and things like that, I simply set aside. I'm not there to speculate. I'm there to move the process forward, and the Senate process is it what I've done. I'm disappointed that she did not appear. To me, I reached out for her to just do that so she has every opportunity to present her case why she should be returned.
So when I spoke to Knodel after the hearing, too, that's really what he's been waiting for. He's like, I'm not going to make a decision yet. Still haven't heard from Senator Majority Leader Devin Lemieux. Does he want him to move forth? He's basically holding off because I even asked him, I mean, are you holding off because of possible legal challenge that you could face? He's like, well, there's all these factors. And, you know, the Democrats, even during the hearing in general, try to bring forth, hey, look at Attorney General Call's argument. He says this, we can't move forward with this. You had Senator Mark Spreitzer try to call the hearing off by citing a legislative council memo that also said that they're interpreting the law differently, that went against Republicans' argument that you can even move forward with this whole process. So that's kind of just the gist of it. But remains to be seen, you know, who acts first.
Yeah. So we're going to court eventually if they move on Megan Wolf. The question is who files a lawsuit, when. So you mentioned the call memo. Ledge Council is saying, no, it takes four commissioners to nominate somebody. They only had a 3-0 vote. They're saying she hasn't been renominated. Now, Senator Public is taking the stance that she has been renominated and is properly before the chamber. If you look closely at the state law, when it comes to the Elections Commission, there's a provision that says if there's a vacancy in the administrator's position, the Joint Committee on Legislative Organization, controlled by Republicans, can appoint an interim. So if you hadn't made the argument that she's been reappointed and she's a vacancy, you could move forward and try to appoint somebody. We'd still go to court because Democrats would argue there is no vacancy, citing a decision by state Supreme Court with the old conservative majority that Fred Prain, Natural Resources Board appointee, stayed on beyond his term, that here's when a vacancy occurs. Get a lawsuit that way. So either way, we're going to court if there's a vote to try and take her off. Oh, by the way, we're getting, 14 months out now from Election Day 2024? The longer this drags on, the closer you are to the election, the more uncertainty you have of who's running elections in Wisconsin, the worse look it is for us nationally. We're going to be one of 4 or 5 states that matter in the presidential race. It's not a great dynamic for us to have this unsettled.
Right, and we know how long the court system can take sometimes. So we have a lot going on next year. Also, we have a lot going on in the state Supreme Court as well that we're going to get to in a little bit. So it really is going to be a major timing issue that could have a big factor if Megan is removed from that position. All right, now, like I said, heading into the state Supreme Court, there's, of course, a little bit more riff with some of the justices that we'll get to in a little bit. But again, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is floating impeachment. I also spoke to Senator Dan Knodel. He is on board with impeachment as well. And who we're talking about is Liberal Justice Janet Protasiewicz, who has been really the center of attacks about her comments on redistricting, calling them the legislative maps rigged, calling them unfair. But what's surprising is that there's all this talk of impeachment, and she has yet to even hear a single case. But Voss, again, kind of doubled down. We're exploring it. It's an option if we need to use it. And they just really have a big issue of that they believe she is prejudging cases based on what she said. Now, we haven't heard really much from her at all since the election on what she would do. But Democrats are kind of crying out that she's done nothing wrong. You know, I spoke to Kel DeRoys this week, a Democrat from Madison in the Senate, and she also just kind of reiterated that it is a very high constitutional bar to impeach and remove someone. It has never happened in state history. There was one impeachment that happened to a judge back in the 1843, I believe it was, but he was never removed. So it is unprecedented. But the more Republicans keep talking about it, the more it is in the news. Let's just hear from Voss at a press conference talking exactly about this and why he believes it could have some legs to it.
Imagine that all of us are a judge and we read in the newspaper that a murder was committed. And instantly you say to people, geez, it looks to me like this person is guilty. I certainly would think if I was the judge, I would probably find them guilty. But that's just my personal feeling. And then literally a few days later, you're found out to be the judge on the case. I think anybody watching at home would instantly say, well, that's not fair. How can you be an independent jurist if you start up by saying the person is guilty, but trust me, I'll put my bias aside and still be a fair representative? You can't do that. So my hope is we still will see the Supreme Court justices who have prejudged cases saying that's not right. It's not the way our system of justice in America has ever operated, where you prejudge a case, and that they will recuse themselves from any potential case where they would be involved. If not, to me, that is a pretty clear violation of the way that all of America works, as opposed to not prejudging cases, and it would be one we'd have to discuss.
This is still the talk on a lot of conservative radio. We're hearing from a lot of Republicans, like I said, talking about this, but I think we need to make clear, too, if they impeach, if they remove, the governor would actually be the one who would appoint the replacement. But now there's this other theory of, what if you just, the assembly took action, started the impeachment proceedings, but the Senate doesn't act to remove? That would essentially bar Protasiewicz from doing anything. She'd be in this waiting period. She couldn't weigh in on cases. We did ask Voss about that after the press conference, but he said he hasn't even thought of that. I'm sure he knows about it because he's one of the, I would say, by far the smartest person in the Capitol. But will they go that route? We'll see.
You're also talking about taking an unprecedented step to remove somebody who ran openly just a couple months ago saying that, I think these maps are rigged, I would not recuse myself from a case, and then won by almost 11 points, trying to move that person from office after the voters have spoken. That is a step that would be unprecedented in Wisconsin history. Now, look, my theory about politics is this. It's about two things, getting power and keeping power. You boil it down that, that explains everything in the Capitol, everything in the United States Capitol, everything in politics, period. Let's go back and look. 2018, lame duck session. Republicans, having seen a Democratic governor and AG coming into office, decided to make some changes. What was going on? We have a new liberal majority of the state Supreme Court. They're making changes because they're in charge now. This, though, would be a step way beyond stuff like that. It would make it like child's play. So my question is, one, do they have the grounds? Remember, the Constitution says misconduct, crimes, and misdemeanors. What Protasiewicz is accused of doing, essentially, is, well, if she does it, is hearing a case that she's prejudged. That would normally be an ethics violation that would go to the Judicial Commission for a process that results in a penalty by the court, not impeachment. So that's a whole other ballgame. Number two, I've talked to Republicans who will tell me that they don't think, even though 22 Republicans in the Senate, they will get 22 votes to impeach because there are enough people who go, this is a bridge too far. Mm-hmm. All right? So then, do you just sideline her? Okay, if that happens, it might just be about a delay. We've talked about the timeline of these redistricting lawsuits. If you follow the last timeline from 2 years ago, case by the fall, you get a decision by the spring. March 15th-ish is when the Elections Commission wanted a decision 2 years ago to put maps in place, right, for 2022. If you get that by mid-March of 24, not a problem. But if you push things off, if you delay it until May, June, July, you could have enough room to get through the 24 cycle and see what you do after that. Don't forget, we've talked about before too, this whole thing about like the U.S. Supreme Court and the West Virginia case, 2009, that judge who heard a case after a donor put $3 million into trying to get him elected. That could be a delay tactic, right? So it could be all about that. It's just raw political power. It's raw politics. It's just basically that's all it's about.
Yeah, and I mean, conservatives want Republicans to act, but I think they're continuing to talk about it. And it's important to note, too, Robin Voss has cautioned against it. You know, he's talking about it, but he's also like, this is kind of my last resort. So we will find out soon if the court will accept the case, and I think this will be ramped up again. I'm also really curious, where does Senator Lemahue stand on this? Mm-hmm. He was one of the ones right after the election when the Senate gained the supermajority power to start impeaching, giving them impeachment powers, excuse me, to remove government officials, judges, and justices. He kind of really walked it back. He said, unless crimes are committed, I mean, I'm not really interested in it. But I think he might feel some pressure from some of his members, but I don't think all of his members would completely vote for it.
And remember, we were already hearing from at least one lawmaker about impeachment just because the court was liberals trying to change administrative procedures or fire Rainey Koshnick as director of state courts. All right, that's how easy it is for some people to throw that out as an option. Let's also think about this, as one Democrat told me, like, one, this Democrat was outraged the idea of removing Pro Se, which was said, if you thought we saw money flow in Wisconsin this past spring, the Supreme Court race, it would be child's play compared to what you would see nationally. The focus of donors on Wisconsin because Republicans removed a duly elected state Supreme Court justice just to remain in power, it would be unbelievable. The attention, the money, it would be mind-blowing what you might see here in Wisconsin if that were. I don't think we're going to get there. But if you try to get there, I think you would see, like, really. And then, too, the Republicans who are in seats that Pro Se which won this spring, what are they going to do?
Right?
Like, granted, you're going to see a bigger turnout in November of 24 than you saw in April of 22, or 33, but they got to think, like, this might not be good for me back home if I do something like
this. And what are the implications about it? You know, even looking at when they voted to impeach former President Donald Trump, those Republicans that did so, I mean, some of them lost and some of them were just basically ghosted. Like, we don't even want to talk to you anymore. And it really changed the atmosphere quite a bit.
Let's also address, is it fair for Pro Se which to hear a case which she campaigned on it being the maps being rigged? Now, there are several layers of the challenge, right? One is that these districts aren't contiguous. They're basically islands of, like, the district that aren't touching other pieces of it. That's not about a political persuasion. That's about a different standard. But she campaigned on the map. Should she hear this case?
That's a fair argument. Yes. Yeah.
So,
continuing on this topic, it was a few weeks ago, I believe last week, Republicans filed a motion to try and kick off Protasiewicz from this case. And we finally had liberal attorneys respond to that recusal motion. So what they were trying to argue in this is that they said Republicans were trying to essentially invalidate Protasiewicz's victory by asking her to recuse herself from a pair of redistricting lawsuits. Now, the court hasn't taken these yet, but this is the step that they're taking ahead of time. Attorneys objected to the Republican recusal motion by arguing they have no legal obligation to do this. And they said, quote, they're unhappy. Republicans are acting because they're unhappy with the election results and that they're just seeking to nullify the results and pick their justices. That's from the group of liberal attorneys that are in court trying to argue this case. Where this goes from here, once again, I feel like that's what I'm tossing to you this entire show.
So, Protasiewicz, it's her decision alone. Mm-hmm. What's fascinating is Republicans, conservatives had a chance 6 or 7 years ago to set a recusal standard, right? And they said, no, we are not going to set a standard based on campaign contributions. Now, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin is not a party to this lawsuit,
yes,
either lawsuit. It did, though, give $10 million to Protasiewicz, and Republicans argue you cannot ignore the line between interests of the party, the candidates that they support, and the voters who filed this lawsuit. But they had a chance to set a recusal, and they didn't do it. They have said it is basically up to the justice or judge, him or herself, to step off. There are laws and rules in place that say this is when you should step off, but only you decide if you cross that line. So for Protasiewicz, she got the recusal motion, she set the deadline to respond to it, now it's her decision to make, while the court is considering, should we accept this case, period. And what's interesting, if you read those various filings this week, the West Virginia case we talked about, Republicans are adamant, look, there's $10 million that went to her, $3 million to this guy. It's way more money over here. The Democrats raised issues of, like, okay, hold on a second. That case in 2009, the $3 million was more than both candidates spent to combined. Okay, it overshot everything else. $10 million is a lot, but I tracked $56 million spent overall. It wasn't the overshadowing, like, the dominant spending in it. Two, You can't say that money was the driving factor alone. Daniel Kelly made a lot of mistakes in that campaign, and abortion was a huge issue. So there's also all kinds of other stuff. And three, the three justices left the Supreme Court who heard that case said they dissented from that 5-4 decision in 2009 saying this is not a workable standard. You have to have something that's in place that is not subjective but, you know, an easy guide or doesn't work. So what would the U.S. Supreme Court do if it got this? Again, my impression is even if it's not successful, it's about delay. And if you look at the contracts lawmakers have signed for redistricting lawyers, one of them has a provision that notes this is for a case in front of the state Supreme Court and possibly the U.S. Supreme Court. They're already preparing for that possibility of going up there to the feds.
And all this redistricting talk, impeachment talk, is also coming when the justices on the court are still having a little bit of a tension, yeah. a little bit of a feud that we're seeing in new emails that were obtained by some reporters. I'm sure you got them as well. It was basically conservative Chief Justice Annette Ziegler who was still reeling from the months-long actions by liberals on the court. I mean, you had the firing of the state directors of courts. Then, you know, liberals voted to really restrict a lot of her powers. So she hasn't been pretty happy about that. So we got some more emails that kind of sheds light on this rift that has primarily been between liberal Justice Rebecca Dallet and Chief Justice Ziegler. So I'm just going to read some of them from these emails that Ziegler wrote on Monday that these actions this past month are nothing short of an unprecedented coup. She specifically talked about her mental health is suffering from this rash decision-making. She has no confidence in what she called a hostile takeover of the court. And then you kind of had some sassiness dished back by Rebecca Dallet that said, you know, this is kind of irrelevant. Your arguments don't matter. She believes she was in line to vote on these changes and to fire. And all of this comes in as Ziegler now wants to post a job opening for Radney Koshnick, who was the fire state director of the courts. But, you know, liberals are arguing, well, you can't do that. We already have someone in place, the Milwaukee County Judge Skowronski, that is serving in that. So she was even tied up in these in these emails.
So the onion is multi-layered once again. Yeah. So first, let's talk about the director of state courts. There's an interim director right now, Milwaukee County Judge. State law and constitution says you cannot take a public office if you're a sitting judge until your term is over. A public trust, I think, or something like that is the definition. So conservatives are saying she's violated that law. Liberals are saying, hold on a second, we have an opinion from the attorney general saying this is not a position of public trust. And oh, by the way, if you are going to argue that she's taking another position or whatever, this is a judicial job. Okay, so it's all kosher, which is why I often say the caveat, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but it's because you have some of the smartest lawyers in the state, these judges, justices, can't agree on how things work. The layer of the administration of the Supreme Court. The Constitution says the Chief Justice is the administrator of the state court system. Ziegler is saying, I am the administrator. It is my authority you're undermining. Dallet's saying, alas, you forgot this part of the Constitution that says, with the consent of us, essentially. It's not a court of one, but a court of seven. We all have equal say in how things are run. You can't dictate things to us. And then finally, you have this dynamic where the Chief Justice is basically in the minority party, right? So let's, I know they're conservative liberals, call them like parties, essentially. Mm-hmm. She's the minority party trying to dictate how the majority does stuff. Majority is saying, nah, we're in charge now. We get to say what's going to go on. And if you read the emails from Dallet closely, there are a couple of lines of like, we're doing this trying to respect your desire to remain Chief Justice, saying that, look, you want to be in this job, okay, but we're not going to let you run the show because go back to like redistricting. Ziegler, under the old rules, would have options to try and slow things down. The liberals are not going to give her that option. It is going to be a tense meeting that they have next week, like the first one they're going to have in
on
a while.
Thursday.
Yeah. So that should be interesting. But this is basically, for the vast majority of the public, this is not going to impact anything in your life. Nothing
it
the court
is
doing matters to real people and how they go about their daily business. However, it is hurting the court's perception. And in my talk to lawyers, some feel like it's a purposeful thing by conservatives to say, look, this court has run amok. Because when they start losing cases because of a fourth liberal majority, they can say, this court is off the rails.
Good campaign message. Mm-hmm.
So don't yeah, we lost redistricting lawsuit, but it's because they're biased against us, trying to diminish the value of the court and what it means to the public's eye.
Yeah, because don't forget, there's another state Supreme Court election in 2025.
Yep.
How fun.
Yep.
All right, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, Your Week in Review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.